Enter if you dare this ghastly conversation of teens fraught with despair and recent lacerations. Final girl, chase after her, don't let her get away. But first, the Slumber Podcast Massacre.
Welcome to Slumber Podcast Massacre with TNA. God damn it, that's Tim.
God damn it, that's Andy.
And this is a podcast about horror. Every week, Tim and I get together. We talk about a different movie from the horror genre, from your well-known classic down to that rare gem that saves the world with a bottle of Glenfarclan scotch. I knew I would fuck the name up. It even wrote it wrong. I must have autocorrected it.
Wait, can I stop you? I'm going to stop you unprecedentedly for 1 second. Yeah. There is a scotch that you like called Lagavulin. I literally saw it on a shelf tonight for $2,399.
I don't like that one.
I went up to the counter. I said, is that right? And they said, is it the handwritten one? And I said, yes. And they said, yes, that's $2,399.
Where?
It's in Chesterton, Indiana.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it's 26 years old. Mm. Yeah. And it's a chunk
I'm
of change.
Listening. No,
yes, good Lord. I'm stealing it.
Thank God I don't drink, because that would be enticing, because a good expensive scotch.
Yeah.
You taste it. You do.
Right.
I'm going to say it.
It's a good time to bring up our Patreon program for $2,399.
Our new tier. Okay. Yeah. So that rare gem that saves the world with a bottle of Glenfarclan scotch at the back of your video store shelf. This week, as Evil Dice Tonight is coming to a close. My God, I see the end in sight here. Old Lady Luck has dished up a real fucking fun movie that's going to be a lot of fun to talk about from 2016. It's 10 Cloverfield Lane. Tim, do you ever worry you're not prepared enough for the future?
Oh.
Because you're not you're not a survivalist.
Kind of. I'm an unprepared survivalist.
Yeah.
I really am. I've
seen how organized you are.
Yes, organized, no. Weapons placed variously throughout the house, absolutely. No, I think about this shit all the time. And every time I tell myself, I'm going to get the whatever it is, like, $300-$400, maybe it's $700. I can't remember exactly, but I want to get the Patriot pack that has 3 months of food. So it's got 3 months. Now that's just for one person for 3 months. So you've actually got to get like four of them, but it's got all the freeze dried food that you need. Good meals, tasty meals that you and your family will enjoy. And it will last you for 3 months. I want to get that. I want to get the bug out bag that has like the alcohol and the gauze and the duct tape and the flashlight and the batteries. I want to have a generator outside of my house, one of those nice big generators. The steel shutters, I'd love to have. I have no guns.
I want to ask a different question because I don't like
what you're hearing.
I don't like who you've become.
No, I'm just saying, this is preparation. This is like, I guess I'm just excited.
You're like every YouTube video I've made fun of for the last 10 years. Know.
And the thing is, I totally realize it, but it's literally just that 1% chance where if that does happen and you're like, motherfucker.
Right. Yeah. That's, yeah.
So, and
see,
this all.
I was right.
This all started way, way, way back when, decades ago, when I was at this girl's house whose dad or uncle invented something that came along before Sam's Club, that was like a buy-in, like buying power company.
Yeah.
And I went to his house and he had the largest house in a fancy rich place over in our town. And I was down in his basement and the door opened. I think I brought this up on the show before.
Maybe.
Where the door swung open just a little bit in what looked like a storage room. But it turned out that beyond that door was a room that was even higher ceilinged than the basement that we were in. It almost looked like a little like gym in there or something. And it was just steel racks like you would see at Menards or Home Depot. I mean, 20, 30 of these racks filled with 5 gallon jugs of water, all kinds of shit. As far as I could see, like I could see
50
boxes
legs
of food.
Of lamb.
What's that?
Yeah, 50 legs,
20
of,
legs
lamb.
Of lamb. Cold cereal, dry cereal. But so that kind of like planted the seed in me where it's like, this guy's, and he was a douchebag. But I'm like, this motherfucker like has the money to where if everything goes to shit, all the good people are going to suffer. And this douchebag is going to survive.
Right.
Because of the preparation. So yeah, I like, and I, but you know what, this has been ever since I was a kid. This is even before any sort of like party line thing. Like when I was a kid and watching all these horror movies, we would be out sledding in the middle of the night in Dr. Renault's backyard. And we would ask ourselves, we get to the bottom of the hill. It's pitch black outside, farmland for miles. And we would say to ourselves, like, what would you do if you just saw like Jason walking across the field right now?
Right.
You know, so my whole life I've been prepping for this tragedy right. to beset me. And so I kind of, but the thing is, like, I feel like if I had the stuff, then I could relax.
Sure.
That's all I need. I'm not saying like I've got to like get obsessed and keep buying more and more and more. That could never happen. I want the one bug out bag. I want the generator, the food, and this is the surprising thing. You would think that I would have
a bug out bag?
Bug out bag is a bag that you have that you can grab quickly if you have to, either where you're at or if you have to be on the run.
It was named in 1989.
Yes.
When you got right. Were you bugging?
Yeah. It was named, in urban Philadelphia in 1992. The bug out bag. Will Smith called it, and what it is it's a large backpack that is filled with survival things, anything that you would need, maybe extra batteries, flashlights, general first aid.
Supplements.
What's that?
Some supplements.
Supplements, maybe. Yeah, that's it. Dude, I think about this shit all the time.
Because
you know why?
It.
But listen, if you watch, The Walking Dead, very few people with glasses. They're the first ones to go because they broke their glasses when they were running. They can't see the zombies coming.
Yeah.
So it's going to be natural selection all over the place. So you have, like, I want a lot of contacts because I wear contacts. I don't even have an extra pair of glasses if I run out of contacts. That's a problem. Just day-to-day life. No zombie, like, apocalypse
needed.
You
think if people lost their glasses, they wouldn't be able to see zombies?
Not as well. You know,
well, sure, they wouldn't be like, is that my neighbor Ted? No, right. But I'm pretty sure there's a distinct thing about them.
You just wake up and start swinging a machete for as long as till your arm like wears out and then you switch to the other one. but no, I think about that. I'm also on some medications this came up in Signs where the kid had asthma. And it's like, well, if he doesn't have his asthma doesn't have his inhaler, he's going to die.
Yeah.
So you got to think about that stuff.
There someone that did he have asthma and Signs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's been a while since.
So they had to like, remember he didn't have his thing. So like Mel Gibson was like holding him and like just trying to calm him down naturally.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
So,
good movie.
Yeah. And,
I don't find the, if I can interrupt, awesome, really important tangent. The big jump scare in that movie is when they're watching like the tape from like Mexico. I don't think that part's scary at all. And now I watch videos of people filming their kids watching that scene. And it's that part?
Are you talking about where the alien's reflection is in the TV?
No. It's where they're like, it's where the news is like broadcasting like a birthday party in Brazil or Argentina something.
Yeah.
And it just like walks by.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know.
Right.
That part seems to be the jump scare of that movie. And even when I saw it, I mean, cool part, but not, I wasn't scared. I just want to make it known. That part didn't scare me.
I just want to say that, you know, what a high level of actor Joaquin Phoenix is to be seen as a like semi-pro baseball player. Like, right. There's that. Like,
thank you.
Kid who probably never played catch in his front yard in his life, but sang on the corner in like Costa Rica with a guitar for money because his, you know, family is in some cult.
And
regardless,
back to whatever you were
right,
but saying.
Yeah, regardless, back to the pertinent things. No, I do think here's the thing. start small. Start from the fact of, does your family have, like, do you know where your flashlight is? Do you have some candles for, like, if the power goes out?
Right. That's a good place
maybe
to
you
start.
Maybe you put a blanket in the car. Maybe you put a bottle of water in the car. So if you're doing this stuff, mm-hmm. how crazy is it to have, like, a stockpile of medication that you take for the next 9 years? You know, like,
I mean, a little. That's like, what's crazy, putting on your seatbelt or strapping in like a 9-point harness.
Okay. Oh, well, okay. That's a fair
point. Every time you drive.
That's a fair point. However, and I won't get into this, but I'll just say this. I think it would take relatively little for our society to absolutely lose its shit and start like it, I think we are like a half step from a purge if the shit really hit the fan.
I believe that. Sure.
I don't trust humanity in the slightest. I believe in the human spirit, but I also believe that I think people would turn on each other in a second. Yeah. Look at old Cabbage Patch Kids.
There's one guy in this country who could say something and you would get 35% of the people going, yeah, all right, cool. That's what we're doing now. All right.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and the thing is, like, watch old Cabbage Patch Kid videos. That's who we are.
The dancing ones or the dolls ones?
The, right. What was the first one?
Dancing.
Okay.
The dance the Cabbage
Patch. I didn't know if there was some, like, dark web, like, Cabbage Patch footage out there, but there is. People lined up for Beanie Babies. You remember that shit? Like 30 fucking people lined up in front of a store to get their hands 30. On the Beanie Babies. It's just, maybe it's just the peace of mind. It's kind of like, I know that I blew the candle out. Mm-hmm. I know that.
Yeah.
We're halfway to where we're going. But I'm going to have a much better time if I go back and make sure that the candle was blown out.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. And it's not going crazy with like an armored vehicle or anything. It's just having some basic like first aid supplies.
Yeah.
And food.
Yeah. Food's good. My plan is just, how do I get in my brother's house? That is my doomsday prepping.
How do I get in the house of the person that did plan for this?
Right.
Yeah. That's the thing. You don't have to do it. You just have to know somebody.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Just because my plan's simpler, it's worse. No.
Yes, right. Like, yeah. Or you just drive to Walmart. Like, look, I feel like I should be in charge, you know.
Right.
And let's just go ahead. I'll divvy out what's needed as needed. And we have everything. that's the part that's interesting about humanity is that, I don't know, the deeper you go down the rabbit hole of party lines and politics and whatever, it kind of makes you feel like sometimes maybe it's all just one big balance just to make us all not kill each other. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of a game that's played by both sides. Who knows? But I do know that the concept itself is not faulted because you're a kid. You scrape your knee outside, you assume that you're going to run in the house and your mom's going to have whatever, like, burning hot ointment that you need put on your skin.
Right.
Because she's prepared for that bad thing to happen.
Yeah.
So the preparation itself isn't paranoid. I guess that is the line in the sand that we draw, which is, where do we go from preparation to paranoia?
Yeah. I think if it's, for me, it's like, if you are prepping for something like an apocalypse, something where by definition you're supposed to die in it, like the life after that, unless you are just like prolonging life in general is the goal. I mean, I guess I can see it, but if you're just like, if I was just stuck in a bunker knowing I couldn't leave it for 40 years, I'm doing myself in before that. No way. What are you doing?
What if it's like a bunker with like a water park? Like, what if it's like the swankest bunker?
I hate water. You know, I'm sure that would be fun for a month.
Yeah.
You know.
But you know,
I love pinball. I got two pinball tables I haven't turned on in like 6 weeks. At least. It's probably my wife's like, it's been years. It hasn't been years.
Yeah, but how comfortable were you during the pandemic, though?
I mean, well, personally, I was elated. It's fantastic.
That's what I'm saying. You know. You were built for a bunker.
But I wouldn't want that. I mean, I still liked talking to people just because I didn't have to be 3 feet from them.
Yeah.
I still enjoyed, you know, getting online, talking to people, getting, you know, doing little FaceTime parties, Zoom parties, whatever. You know, that's gone. All that's gone.
Yeah.
You have no social contact. It is literally just, you are just prolonging life for the sake of prolonging life.
You know who the
that will eventually end.
You know who the motherfuckers are that live longest then?
The ones who don't care.
Readers.
Oh, God.
Those people that are like reading 3 books at a time. All they need is books and they are happy as fuck.
Oh, that's true.
Like, God dang, those people. Like,
I mean, one of the best Twilight Zone episodes.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Burgess. Yeah.
Burgess Meredith. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But no, I told my kid about that one. Blew her fucking mind.
That's where. And isn't it funny? Like, okay, so what years was the Twilight Zone? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just enough space after a like distance in time between a world war to be like, okay, let's talk about some really bad shit. Like, mm-hmm. Let's talk about the worst things that could happen and make a super popular show about it. And yeah, that's the beauty of that show, to know that it's just like, you know, enough of these like giant musicals of like 50 people in synchronized like dancing coming down like a flight of stairs. Like,
right.
Let's talk about you're the last person on the planet. You love to read and you break your glasses. What a bunch of twisted fucks. Like, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
But because that's not even like for horror fans, we can get off on the action. That's just sad.
Yeah. That's just like, no.
Yes. Oh, right.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like just like dropping your phone in a canoeing trip. It's like, no, you know, it's terrible. But yeah, no, I so yes, in short answer to your question, I am one of those people. Not super crazy. I don't even own a gun. But
yeah, you seem pretty short term prepared, but not very long term.
That's what
prepared.
I'm saying. I don't have long term disability, but I got the short term.
Right.
And so that's all I need, because I feel like if you can set yourself up for 2 months, if you've got 60 days to figure out what the next step is, you better have a next step or there's not a whole lot of luck for you anyway.
Yeah.
So that's all you need. Give yourself. Yeah. But see, I say this. And there's no food in my refrigerator right now. That I mean, like, I'm the biggest hypocrite on the fucking planet. There is, like...
Well, like I said, you're short-term prepared.
Right. But I want to be. I
like,
mean, yeah.
In the immediate moment, right. Someone breaks into your house and your Puma statue...
somehow doesn't...
Unable to help.
Doesn't taste as good as I thought it would over the course of 2 months. Yeah, no, you know for a fact I'd be right down here in 2 fucking seconds. Man would be putting out a spread.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're my plan, basically.
All right, that's fine. I'll be at my brother's, but you can stay here. Yeah, you can stay here.
All right.
We got a sump pump and stuff now, so...
Yeah, no, this is nice. Yeah, I like it.
All right.
Let's, you want to talk?
Let's do this. Woo. Let's get into this. Okay. I got a little new iPad set up, so give me a... I want to make sure it's right. Okay. So this is Cloverfield Lane from 2016. Let's do the Wikipedia facts, and we'll talk about it. So this was written by Josh Campbell, Matt Stukin, and Damien Chazelle. Only one of those names rings a bell for very... obvious reasons.
And barely at that.
Right. Only one of those names has a Wikipedia link. We'll put it there. And it was directed by Dan Trachtenberg. It stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead, John Goodman, and John Gallagher Jr. It had a budget of $14 million. It had a fucking box office of $110 goddamn million.
Jesus.
Let's do Nan Summa. We'll get into some spoilers and shit. Michelle is a strong, independent woman who has recently left her life behind her. Leaving behind her boyfriend Ben and the ring he'd hoped she'd have, Michelle finds her newfound freedom short-lived when she is driven off the road and wakes to find herself chained to a bed in a nondescript room. She's soon introduced to her captor, an imposing and intimidating yet seemingly gentle man named Howard, who explains he rescued her from a car wreck and brought her here to safety. However, when Michelle requests to get in touch with her family, Howard reveals that they are most likely dead. And Michelle soon learns that there has been some sort of catastrophic event, and she, Howard, and Howard's construction assistant, Emmett, are holed up in Howard's bunker, unable to go outside. Things seem fine as the three adjust to their new life, but suspicions are raised as Howard's stories from his past refuse to add up, and Michelle and Emmett begin to hatch a plan at a possible escape. Can the two break free of their fortunate prison, or will their permanent address of the apocalypse be 10 Cloverfield Lane? Jeff Goldblum, the end there.
I'm just wondering as you're reading that if I'm a failure in life because I don't have a construction assistant. Right. Like, where did I go wrong? Seems that's what that college helpful. Degree. Yes. Especially if you knew my construction skills. You mentioned that Damien Chazelle, great name. This was the movie he directed, a movie called Whiplash.
Whiplash, that was the first one.
That's yes. Right. Did you like that movie? You're a drummer.
Oh, I love that movie.
That's right. We've talked about
that
before.
Not only am I a drummer, also when I was in high school, I was in a theater, like a musical theater class, and we took a trip to New York. And we went to New York to see Guys and Dolls, starring Nathan Lane, on Broadway. And two members of the cast came out, and one of them was J.K. Simmons. So from that moment, I've been like laser focused on his career. So for him to fucking win an Academy Award for a movie about a drummer, I was beating my meat through that whole ceremony. Yes. Man.
How was J.K. Simmons in that show?
He's great. He's so good. Great. He's so good.
He also did.
Oh, in Guys and Dolls? I thought you meant Whiplash.
Oh, yeah.
Both.
No, yeah.
Both. Yeah. So good.
He also did La La Land.
Yep.
Which is a movie that I liked, although I have two problems with it. Number one, the opening song sucks balls. The rest of the movie's great.
I disagree.
The opening song is just garbage. Also, the movie takes a little bit of a pot shot at the Flock of Seagulls hit Iran, which fucking rules as a song. So a little bit of a problem there, but the rest
two
of that.
Two disagreements.
Yes. And he also was involved with the writing The Last Exorcism 2.
Oh.
Part 2. So,
oh, good. We can, so we'll something never. We forgot to talk about how dumb that title is when we covered that.
Yes.
The
right.
Last Exorcism 2.
Yeah. We were kidding the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's him. Now, then we have Dan Trachtenberg as the director, first-time director, and won an award from the Directors Guild of America for being a first-time director and making this movie. He's going to be, you'll see some of his work coming up if we ever sort out all of this strike business, because he's going to be directing some of the upcoming Stranger Things episodes in season 5.
You know they have a deal, right?
What's that?
Well, the writers do.
The writers
and the
do.
Actors are next.
Right. Yeah. The fucking actors. But yeah.
Well, they went on strike later anyway.
I suppose. So, yeah.
Watch them just fuck the writers.
All we have to do is just call 5. And then the director.
Actors are like, okay. I got to. Yeah.
Right.
Show must go on.
Thanks, 5.
He only also directed Prey. Did you ever watch Prey?
No. The one with the natives.
Yeah.
I never did.
Wow.
I've got to get it. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, like tattoo artists don't write, like watch like tattoo shows. Like it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, I know how actively you avoid anything involving any indigenous people.
Well, part of it is that I don't know, like, is it, what channel is it on?
Hulu.
Oh, okay, Hulu.
It's just a Hulu movie.
I'm cycling through my emails of, like, payment information needs updated. Like, just waiting. I wonder if it's one of those. But he is not related to Michelle Trachtenberg, which I was shocked by because it's of a specific name. Michelle Trachtenberg, you might know from Buffy the Vampire Slayer as Dawn Summers, Buffy's
the sister?
Annoying ass little fucking sister. Oh. So maybe it's okay.
Aren't
that
all
he's
little sisters.
Yeah, I guess they are. And it's nothing against Michelle Trachtenberg. Maybe she was just doing exactly what she should be doing, playing a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
But Dawn was kind of like, when it was a Dawn episode, it was like, you know. But regardless, not related. Although both from the East Coast, both Trachtenberg, I don't know. Second cousins, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Originally this was written by that Josh Campbell and Matt, however you say it, Strucken?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm
not going to say it again, so you can say it however you want.
I wrote, nobody knows who those guys are, so Paramount scooped it up to develop it within their own micro-budget label, Insurge Pictures. So then that's where they bring in Chazelle to do a rewrite, and he was supposed to direct it, but then came Whiplash. So he's like, I am going to leave because I'm going to do Whiplash. And so he left it, and that's when it went through another rewrite, and then they brought in Trachtenberg, who, to the best of my knowledge, had done, I mean, a good handful of things, maybe 6 or 7 projects, but they were all shorts. It must have just impressed somebody. I'm guessing that person is probably J.J. Abrams. So let me tell you something about him. I'm going to get it right out of the way. I don't know anything about that guy, but no. I stopped researching him because of the way he was talked about in regard to this movie, where it's like, J.J. doesn't like it. Like, J.J. says we should do this. Like, and maybe the guy's cool. Maybe he's great. I don't know.
He's not.
But it's like, the way that he is discussed in any regard to this movie is just such a totalitarian thing that I'm like, I don't even want to know who this guy is.
I used to really, really like J.J. Abrams.
So where does it all start for him?
Okay, where it's, at least from my introduction to him was, do you remember the show Alias that gave us Jennifer Garner?
Yeah.
That was a J.J. Abrams show. So that was his kind of big break. Like that was, he created that show. I'm pretty sure he's the showrunner on it. I don't know what else he worked on before that.
Was Bradley Cooper on that?
He was on that.
Okay.
And he shows up in this movie.
Yeah, he does. Okay, anyway. Yeah.
Well, he doesn't show up in this movie. Wink, wink. Right. Anyway. He worked on Alias and then Lost was his big
thing.
Okay. Big hit with Lost. Lost was huge. But and so at this point in my life, and then he puts out this movie called Super 8. Not Super 8. Jesus Christ. Wait, what the fuck was it called?
Superman?
Was it Super 8? What's the Nick Cage one? I don't want to mix it up with that.
Yeah, no.
That's Super 8.
Yes. Right? 8mm.
8mm. Okay. Yeah. So it is Super 8. Okay. Which was this Spielberg homage. Great movie. And then that got him the Star Trek reboot. I think he had another TV show in there maybe.
Okay.
But this is kind of his trajectory. So it goes Alias, Lost, and then Star Trek, Star Wars. Okay?
Now I'm feeling like kind of a douchebag.
No, listen. No. Because listen, we were all fooled.
Okay.
We were all fooled by JJ. Boy. Okay. Because JJ ended up, and he let us know early. Because he does this, there's this TED talk he does where he talks about where he went to this magic shop, right? And he got this, it's like this it's this mystery box, and you don't know what's in the box. And he was fascinated by that concept of having this tangible thing, and inside it could be anything. But just knowing what was in it kind of ruins it. So you can see him apply this interesting idea. It's a cool talk where you're like, ooh, yeah, okay.
Okay.
But after you start applying that to 3 or 4 projects where you're like, this is, because all of those shows, Alias starts off fucking like a banger. I think that show got a little, we were on board immediately. My wife and I loved that show.
Okay. But
it definitely takes a little bit to get going. I think they kind of like revamped it. Like they had an episode after the Super Bowl and they kind of revamped that episode. Hmm. But either way, good show, engaging, very layered, lot of like double crossing. It's a good show. Then Lost and you're just like, God, fuck, this guy's got such an imagination. But And Alias kind of suffered this, and then Lost definitely, where you start getting through it, and you're like, okay, a lot of really cool mysteries in this. Do you plan on answering any of them at any time? And like with a show like Lost, people debate that show. I like it as a whole, but that's a show where people are just like, they had no direction. And that's probably true, because it seemed like JJ, because he left that show. And that's the thing. He'll start some shit and then leave.
Right.
And just be like, I don't really have an answer for it. So if you come up with anything, go ahead. Okay, bye. You know, so
I don't even write out my full name.
Exactly. Yeah. So you see that with Alias, and you definitely see that with Lost. And so then when, you know, the Star Trek thing is like kind of its own thing. He doesn't really have that, but they just are very mismanaged. Like he essentially does remakes Wrath of Khan. Like that second Star Trek movie is Wrath of Khan, but it's fucking dumb. It's just dumb.
So you're saying, so the back to that mystery box thing, are you saying that he eventually, like, he creates something, but that he is the issue that you have, that he doesn't solve it, or that he's got some, like, bullshit hat trick waiting for you?
Well, it's like he doesn't have a, he's like, okay, here's the cool mystery, but also the reveal is also as good. I mean, that's a good mystery.
Okay.
If, like, the questions you have leading up to the reveal are as good as the reveal, right? Where you're
okay.
Either it blows your mind or whatever. But he has no reveal ever.
Well,
he has no
dumb
plan. And like the Star Wars, like when he did Force Awakens, a movie I very much enjoy.
Yeah.
As much of a retread as it was of the original Star Wars, the characters were kind of new enough and engaging enough. I was in on it. But then even that movie ends with, oh, now we've got our hero. She has found Luke Skywalker and is handing him the lightsaber, and we go to black. And then they go, cool, so what happens in the next one? He's like, I don't know. Bye.
Just blue balls.
Yeah, whatever you come up with, I'm sure it'll be fine. It's Star Wars. It writes itself. All right, give me 10 things. Bye. You know. So, yeah, J.J. Abrams, I got some issues with him.
Okay, so
I also appreciate the things he comes up with are good. Like, he has good ideas. He knows how to implement them very well.
Okay.
But yeah, just he has no execution, and man, it's a real bummer. It's a bummer.
Well, so then that makes sense that he was talked about in the regard that I was hearing him talked about. If he's had that string of success.
That was the other project. That might have been what got him Alias.
Right. Yeah, you got to be able to finish that shit off, you know? Interesting. Okay.
Now, the grand irony is, while, yes, like, this movie was, because we have, you know, Paramount sitting on a sleeper hit, Cloverfield, that J.J. Abrams directed. I think he also wrote it. Where they're like, wow, people were talking about it. There's a lot of like classic JJ shit where people are like, ooh, that monster's kind of cool. You barely see it. Where's it from? What's its story? Like, what is the backstory of this Godzilla movie? We know what Godzilla's about, but this isn't Godzilla. Like, what's going on here? And so, but he just never, because he probably had nothing, never pulled a trigger on a sequel. And so then Paramount's like, we got to do something. And so, yeah, they have this movie. And so they're just like, so in classic JJ style, are just like, this?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, sure.
So that makes sense then, to where he's like, I don't really have a definitive ending. I know that obviously the guy has a sense of a hot product in his own creation. Or if he sees it, he's just not concerned with tying up the loose ends. It's kind of like, we'll figure it out when we get there.
Right.
And so this movie,
that part sucks. He doesn't like that part.
Right. And this movie was, bear this in mind, not written as a Cloverfield movie. So this was written as a movie called The Cellar. In fact, I even saw interviews where the actors that are in this film were asked, like, when you first read it, was it called The Cellar? Was it called Valencia? And they're like, well, oh, when I read it, it was The Cellar, or John Goodman. And then when the actor that plays Emmett, he's like, no, it was Valencia by the time I wrote it, I read it. So Valencia was its sort of nickname, because there's a whole speech about a true story of the siege of Valencia. And I think that's, well, I don't know for sure. It might be Greece. But anyway, it was from the table scene. The dinner scene it gets cut out completely. There's no like allusion to it whatsoever,
okay.
Because and kind of, not to jump ahead, but John Goodman gives like such a look at the end of that monologue that the director was like, we just need that look. That's it. We don't need the whole 3-minute monologue where the camera is doing that steady zoom in for 3 minutes while he's telling the story of the Siege of Valencia. They're like, did you see his face at the end of that? Like, let's just keep that in. And I searched like fuck for that monologue and I could not find it. I don't know if it's anywhere, if it's even released.
Yeah.
But yes, the actors in this film did not even know that they were in a Cloverfield film until the trailer came out.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, it's got, you know, J.J. Abrams is attached and it's got some kind of like, J.J. Abrams will have you think that like everything about this movie is innately Cloverfield. Mm-hmm. When it's like, well, how could you really say that? Because the dudes that wrote it wrote their own story right. that had nothing to do with your movie. But they obviously, you know, God, it just all falls into what you're saying, which is this is a guy that sets you up for the best things and he doesn't know how to finish it. And how does he finish it? He grabs a great script, a great spec script from these two guys that nobody knows, but it was on this list of hot spec scripts. He grabs it and he's like, we'll make it a Cloverfield movie.
Yeah.
And now,
which they tried a third time as well, should point out we won't dwell on the Cloverfield shit, and we might even probably cover Cloverfield at some point because it's a good movie worth talking about.
I haven't seen it, and the differences between that original script and this movie before we get into the nuts and bolts of this one is that Howard in The Cellar, the John Goodman role, is much more sympathetic. He's an alcoholic. His wife, I think died in an accident that he might have caused, but it was on accident. Mm-hmm. And he lost his daughter as a result or whatever. So him having the captor there, Michelle.
Yeah.
Him having her there is really more of a sad, sympathetic thing of like trying to, you know, have a daughter again, have right. a family again. So he's much more sympathetic. The character of Emmett is much more intimidated by Howard, trying to match Howard, fighting him at every turn.
Okay.
And it's more of a power struggle there. So it's a much, much different film. And the Howard that we get, thanks to John Goodman and the rewrites, is much creepier.
Yeah. In the original, is it still kind of ambiguous as to why they're down there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. The whole thing with Howard saying what has happened, you don't know if that's true or not. So okay. I would say a good 70, maybe to 75% of what we see on the screen is at least in that The Cellar script or strongly related to it.
Okay.
Just a little bit of a different, it's the most of the differences within the motivation of the characters themselves. Also, Michelle is like 18 instead of like a professional designer or yeah. whatever, or grad student, whatever it may be. So some subtle differences, but not huge. And then now we have our movie. And I know that I want to ask this question. You would think that this question would come at the end, but I'm just going to say it now because it's an interesting thing to talk about. Can an ending of a film ruin the entire thing for yes. you?
No. Oh, no. Oh, ruin the entire thing for you? No, no, no. Sorry.
So
I should let you ask
so
the
you
question.
Should, so you would. You are still able to I'm jumping all the way to the end. Yeah. You're able to say 10 Cloverfield Lane is a good movie.
I'll say this for me, because at the time of watching this movie, I was hyper aware of the background shit that was going on. I knew about how they're just tacking the Cloverfield name on here, you know, but I mean, not really tacking on, because at the time there still was a like, I didn't know they were doing a sequel. Oh, it's in a bunker? Like, how does that work with, like, Godzilla monster? Okay, this might be interesting. Let's see what they've got, right? And then the end, the last 10 minutes are so stupid and unnecessary. And But it does not ruin it. It can't ruin this movie. That's the great thing about how shitty this ending is. It's so shitty, yet it cannot ruin this movie. It's like two separate movies, it feels like.
It is.
It feels so out of place and different from everything I've seen so far that, but, and also knowing just like being halfway through it and you just kind of have to be like, oh, all right, this is just studio shit. Like it feels, that whole sequence feels like studio notes. Can we have like a part where she like rips her suit? Can we have a part where she, like a Jurassic Park part where they're like creeping around in some area? Can we have a part with a giant ship where she blows? Can
you
we
just see them like up? Jacking off through the zipper of their suits, like just like naming off bullshit that just works in other movies. No, you're right. And it's a definitive shift. And it's one that is, it unfortunately, and you and I are both stage actors, so obviously I have a soft spot in my heart for things that I feel could play on the stage.
Yeah.
And the first 90% of this movie absolutely could.
Yeah.
And would be a hell of a show. Mm. And so, because it's all character driven, and it's all sort of space compressed, and... you know, there's tension. There's tension and awkwardness from the word go, and almost to the point, and John Goodman does not need to borrow from anybody. But I'll tell you what, when his character is first introduced, I'm like, ooh, there's a little bit of misery here. There's a little bit of Kathy Bates. There's a little bit of that touchy, quick to anger, like, kind of seems really nice, but has this sort of hair trigger to anger and temper. Yeah. I'm not
very
saying
straightforward, has a very blunt answer for everything.
And the thing is that it's not fair.
That's a good observation.
Well, thank you. And it's not fair for me to clinically diagnose the character of Howard as played by John Goodman, but there are certainly signs of on the spectrum there, because especially in that dinner scene where Emmett begins to incorporate some humor.
Yeah.
And Howard is not able to follow and like vibe with that humor and those beats. And it's kind of like, and you can see that in him, like, I'm not a part of this, so I don't want this to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And he's aware enough, being, you know, a middle-aged guy or even older, that it's like, I know when I'm not a part of things anymore, and I don't want that.
Yeah.
You know, this is my place. I made this. You're all here because of me, and I want to keep it that way. Yeah. Like, I'm in charge.
And if you two get close,
right,
I'm cut out.
Exactly. So whether or not he has a psychological diagnosis or not is kind of, it doesn't really matter that much. But there is something that certainly comes across from Howard that is more than like an asshole or a prick. There's something, there's another screw loose there.
Yeah.
And so what I like about it, though, is that we get that tension, and the movie does a nice job of, I don't know if we ever think that Howard is a great guy, but we do. The movie does a really, really fantastic job of making him just plausible enough to be like, maybe this isn't a bad guy to know in this situation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you can't, you know, you can't have a guy who's going to be that kind of a prepper. Those guys aren't laid back.
Right.
So that guy's going to be naturally tense. So as long as you show those tense moments but don't feel in danger during them, then it's a very easy way for the characters and for you as an audience member to put your guard down and just be like, well, yeah, of course, he's like obviously a doomsday prepper, but he is providing for these two people. It's not like he locked them out too.
Well, I'm going to go pee, and I'm going to leave you with an extremely difficult question.
No, no.
This one you're going to have to think about.
Okay.
So we know that Howard has built this bunker. We also know, as it comes out, that Howard had another person present in the bunker for some time, a younger girl that had gone missing in the community.
Yeah.
Okay. So my question to you is this. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Is he a doomsday guy who built a bunker in preparation for doomsday, and once he had it built and he lost his family, he took this girl? Mm-hmm. Or did he build this as a means to have a place that couldn't be discovered so that he could steal a girl and create his own family?
Interesting. All right, that is a good question. I mean, I would personally think, I think he's just a doomsday guy. And then, yeah, you know, it could be like, I'm also going to then kidnap a girl to see how easy it is for me, you know, to keep someone here. Maybe it's like a nice, also little test run. How well can they survive in here? But yeah, but the other side of me, because I'm not going to lie, that is something I thought about while watching this movie. But I also look at it from the perspective of, you know, is this another one of those writer interference things where, yeah, he is a guy who could have the thing, but also let's also make him a predator.
Well, there you just stumbled upon what I feel is the best part of this movie. And that is, it's kind of funny. Sometimes in life, you, especially if you start to study like something like psychology is the first thing that comes to mind. You realize you'll be reading it and you'll be like, I could have fucking thought of that. But it took somebody putting it on paper, yeah. Right? So I have a point here and I'll get to it. Trust me. So if you're reading psychology and you're like, somebody writes out the fact that what you choose in your relationships is based on the personalities of your mother or your parental units and their interaction with each other. And then you seek that out in your own relationship. Well, to say that sounds obvious, right? But it took somebody to put that on paper for it to be studied and then used and applied. Mm. It's the same thing with this movie. The idea of having a character who you think is bad for one reason and isn't, but is bad for another reason. It's like, how the fuck isn't this in like 50 other movies? Right. And maybe it is, and I'm not thinking it through, but it felt pretty fresh.
Yeah.
The fact that there is a guy
I'm glad you had that reaction because, yeah, that is kind of what I've been toiling with. Because, yeah, it is. I want it to feel fresh, but the cynical part of me is like, it's just like more notes. Like, he's got to do something else. So we got to have something else in here. Because the existence of that room where she finds the earring that is left by Megan, who is that, you know, because he tells Michelle, this is my daughter. And then later when Emmett sees the picture, it's a picture of this girl. He's like, no, that's not his daughter. I know his daughter.
Yeah, I know that girl.
Yeah, and that girl went missing. Weird to just tell such a lie with two people who could easily talk to each other about a picture that's out all the time. Anyway, so she finds like an earring in that room and help scratched in the window. Now that room, while a interesting place to have that reveal, a nice intimate place to have that reveal, as far as doomsday prepping goes, if all of your air ventilation goes through a place that you, John Goodman, could never get to. You have to climb through two levels of ducts. You have to climb through the ductwork to get to this vital room that controls your air supply. Ooh. That's where it starts to feel like someone was just like, put this part in.
And how the fuck did Megan ever get up there? Right. Unnoticed.
Why was Megan? Probably the air went out. Yeah. Well, the Megan, I can understand.
Or where maybe he sent maybe her up there.
She's trying to escape. Like if she's just living down there alone, right? Because he's not. We don't actually have an apocalypse going on.
Oh, so he was in the farmhouse. He kept her downstairs.
Right. Yeah. That's what I would imagine is going on there. Okay. Maybe he's living down. That's the other thing. I don't know.
That's fair. Yeah.
Is he telling Megan there is? You know. Right. Is that one of those things where he brings girls down there, lies to them, and then this one time he's like, oh, fuck, actually there is an apocalypse going on outside. Right. But yeah, the Megan thing can easily be she's in there, she tries escaping through the ductwork and is, you know, scratches or whatever through there. Why would you, you know?
Yeah, no, that is
just stay in that room.
I didn't even think about
that.
That would be like one of the most crucial rooms that you would want access to. No, excellent point.
It's like, you know, we have enough food for 10 years. It's at the end of this hallway with the flamethrowers and giant rotating blades.
Right. Yeah. You better get on kidnapping Peter Dinklage as quickly as possible, like, if you want this thing to work long term. But, sorry. Well, it's a very small area, but, sorry. But that would be a clash of personalities there, really. Oh, yeah. They're both temperamental. But anyway, let me just say this. Now, this is, I want to get this out, and I don't want to forget this. I would hope, now, as the movie progresses, as, especially when, after he, Howard, shaves.
Yeah.
And after Emmett is gone, we'll eventually get to that, because that's a
great,
yeah, blast scene. Of the face, literally. So after he shaves, after he is now seeing he and Michelle as a family, that's where we can maybe, I think it's probably safe to assume that Michelle was well on her way to experiencing some assault, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Probably. So that's probably fair.
Well, I don't know, though. I don't know.
Maybe not, because he doesn't see her as a woman. So maybe not.
But he hasn't been sexual in any way.
Well, that's true.
Believe more of you're my replacement family, not my
sex. Yeah, you're my daughter
toy.
That was taken away from me because I'm fucking crazy. Yeah. Right. No, and you're right. And the fact there's that great, great scene during charades where he does not see her as a woman, because if I say that she's a woman, then she can't be my daughter.
Right.
Because my daughter would be a little girl.
Yeah.
That's how I remember her. So that's a really fantastic
You're right. Yeah.
Scene.
During that scene, that is a part where you're like, is he on it? Because the book, the charade book is Little Women. So Emmett's like, we've got Little, and he's like, her, she is, and yeah, that part is where you would almost expect like the reveal of maybe something sexual or like
she's a woman.
I can't, like, I don't know what to say, 'cause I don't want to reveal exactly what I think about her.
Right.
You know?
But I'll tell you this.
But
much.
I like that. I like that. That, because I don't think it's anything sexual. So I like that, where he doesn't.
So if that's the case, then, even if that's the case, ladies and gentlemen, let me just say this. And this comes from years of watching HBO, like we've mentioned on this show, used to rerun when they would have a TV or a movie or show that they wanted to show you.
Yeah.
They would show it to you again and again and again.
Oh, yeah.
One of those movies was called Without
Three
a Trace.
A week, 7 o'clock.
Yes. Without a Trace with Judd Hirsch. Where he played a New York cop that could not let go of a case of a boy that was walking home from school at like 5 years old.
Wait, what's it called?
It's called Without a Trace. And the kid is walking home. He's maybe 5, 6 years old. He gets kidnapped. And like, I think a couple of years go by, maybe even like 4 or 5 years. This would have been like 1980, 81, 82, 83. Okay. Yeah. So I watched this movie over and over. They eventually find the kid, and he is just like, he answers the door at some like white trash house, and he's like, hey, and you know, Judd Hirsch is like, you know, can I talk to like your dad or whatever? And the kid turns around and he's like, calls the dad. Like, the kid has just so sadly become accustomed to this new life. My point is this: fuck kidnappers. I don't give a shit if he wasn't going to rape her or kill her or not. You kidnap somebody and take them for your own, whether you never touch a hair on their head, you should absolutely fucking go to jail for the rest of your life and never breathe another free breath of air ever again. Because the pain that would be caused by so many, I mean, it's the equivalent to death.
Yeah.
So what he's doing, don't ever mistake the fact that what he's doing is purely evil.
Yeah.
So the question is, though,
also in, well, go ahead and ask the question.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay. So this is the big question then. When Howard, because it becomes evident that Howard caused the accident that Michelle got in so that he, to render her unconscious so that he could bring her to the bunker.
Yeah.
The question is this.
Well, that's assumptive. He could have just hit his story. about being in a panic,
right?
Because it's the end of the world. Without the, if the reveal was it's not the end of the world, yeah, he's a fucking scumbag abductor.
But doesn't she see that truck behind her just like normal though? And then all of a sudden that truck runs her off the road.
Oh, that's a good point.
Is he hunting for some, did he see this shit, hit the shit hitting the fan and say, I could get my hands on a girl and get her down there?
Or was it just one of those coincidences he's like, I'm going to,
he's like, this is my lucky day.
And then, oh shit, I also now have to stay down there.
Yeah. So it's tough to say. Either way, he's wrong in what he's doing. But what's interesting, though, is that Emmett's story, which Emmett, now this is where things get compelling. This is where the movie is doing a good job of saying to you, I think I've got this figured out. But then Emmett will come along and be like, no, I'm not here beyond my will, like against my will.
I was trying to, I hurt myself getting in here. Yeah.
Yes. So that is really great. And they did a really nice job with his character. They actually reshot his entire first scenes with Michelle, because in the original script, he's a little bit more, like I said, a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more power hungry. So he was kind of shitty to her. But in the movie that we see, he's like a sweetheart from the beginning, much. And I think we need that. And I'm glad that we have that. And I think it suits that actor.
I don't think anyone would want to watch her just be trapped with the two aggressive guys through a whole movie.
Yeah.
One guy's creepy enough.
Yeah, we've seen Last House on the Left.
Yeah, so you have to have like the dumbest, like most simple guy who seems to just not have a fucking care in the world.
Right. And a likable guy. And to the point where you're like, God, if it was just the two of them, first of all, I don't want to be like perverted. How do you not fuck at that point?
Well, yeah.
You're down there. Well, here's a question for you. Two questions. How long do you think it is from her accident to where she's first in the bunker and then awakes chained to the bed with a, you know, healing from whatever her injuries are?
Yeah.
How long do you think she's been down there before she wakes up? And then how long do you think that they're down there total before what ends up being the climax of the movie?
I mean, I think initially like a day, probably not that long.
Okay. So she hasn't been like knocked out for like 2 weeks or anything.
No. And then I don't know. It's hard to tell with the montage, but I would assume they would get in a groove pretty quickly.
The director says he was working under it's never explained. He said they were working with like 2 months.
Oh, okay. I would have even said less than that. I would have said a few weeks.
Okay. Because you're right. You're going to kind of, what I do like is that she does fight. Like, you're almost watching this and you're like, God, just don't fight so hard. But you would. You would.
She's very resourceful. Like, she is a very smart character. Like, every chance she gets, every resource she has at her disposal, she uses in the beginning as a means of trying to escape.
Yeah. And I'll just make a quick point of this. As I was watching it, and she is making so many attempts to escape, and so quickly, and so furiously. I mean, she's ready to jab Howard in the fucking neck with a sharpened crutch in the first, 20 minutes of the movie. At first, I was kind of like, God, I don't want to take Howard's side, but it's kind of like, if you just play along a little bit, it'll be fine. But that's my personal problem,
right?
As a person, as me, as who I am, is putting up with that bullshit. So here's the thing:
she's a person who just literally escaped something.
Well, that's true,
and now she's trapped again,
right? So
John Goodman, while he doesn't look like Bradley Cooper, also does not sound like Bradley Cooper,
right? No, but I will say this, and then I promise we'll get back to the movie. If you are in a situation, regardless of like, well, gosh, my house is taken care of, my food is taken care of, this is my parent, or I'm married to this person, or this is my girlfriend or boyfriend. If you're in a situation where you're walking around somebody on a day-to-day basis on eggshells, get the motherfuck out of that.
Well, yeah,
get
please.
The fuck out of there, because that person could claim to be the way that they are because, oh, they're passionate, or, oh, they don't know any better. Bullshit. That's emotional manipulation. You were the first person that I knew that said that phrase to me, by the way. And you should absolutely, and she makes the right choice. If you've got that funny feeling like somebody if you're feeling unsafe, unsettled, humiliated, put down, whatever, by anybody, get the motherfuck out of that.
Yeah, they're not worth your time.
Yes, absolutely not. So, now that we've got that out of the way, there is a nice respite in this movie where we get a little oasis where Michelle kind of starts to see a little bit of honesty from Howard.
Yeah.
To where she feels like, oh, maybe I've misjudged him. And then we get a little bit of a montage where people are just living their lives down there.
Yeah.
Putting the puzzles together.
Playing games, doing dishes, making dinner.
Yeah. And that, I think we'd need that.
He's got a really nice bunker. Let's not beat around the bush here. If you're going to be trapped somewhere, yeah, you want it to be with this guy he's got a fucking jukebox down there, goddammit.
Yeah. Now, Michelle's room redefines the concept of minimalism, but other than that, the rest of the place it's cozy.
Yeah, the living area is immaculate.
Here's the thing. It would be real great with not a stranger that made you feel creepy.
Right.
Like, if it was your family or whatever, or like your boyfriend or girlfriend, like, you got a pretty swank place.
Oh, yeah.
Movies.
It's where you'd hang out. You know what I mean? It's like late. It's like, you guys want to go to the bunker?
Yeah, right. God, does one of us need to build a bunker?
No.
Okay, we'll save that for down the road. But anyhow, we get a nice little fun bit where it seems like people are sort of getting along, and I think we kind of need that breath of fresh air. Now, you have to kind of think back a little bit to when you were first watching this.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself going back and forth with whether Howard was good or bad? As far as you can remember.
The first time?
Yeah.
Sure.
Or because more importantly, that he's right or wrong about something going on outside.
Well, do I trust what he's saying? And, I mean, sometimes. I mean, the movie does a good job of already playing on my prejudice. I'm going to already have a preconceived idea of what this guy who leads this kind of life is. And he's not going to be someone I'm particularly would trust right away. I would be like, this guy is a little crazy.
Yeah.
Like, look, just because you're right during that 1% time. Mm. Doesn't mean that you were not crazy to think, like, that's what makes you crazy is thinking the like 0.5% thing is definitely going to happen. I'm going to be on edge with this guy. But he gives no signs of I want to hurt you. Everything he does is through care. I'd be a little like, why did you have to chain me up? But at the same time,
the food looks good.
You don't want someone freaking out. Of course, if they just wake up in a strange, they don't even know it's a bunker yet.
Right.
But a windowless room, not a good feeling. Even this fucking basement has a tiny window.
Sure.
I get the like chaining them up so that they don't freak the fuck out, which she even still did. She's like, I'm still biding my time. I'm going to freak the fuck out on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, the movie does a good job of not knowing whether or not you should really trust this guy. Now, during the dinner when he, you know, is clenching his fists, then you're like, okay, this guy you're like, is.
God damn it.
Yeah, like, he is a little.
Yeah.
Now the fun part is, how crazy is this guy?
Right.
And he's really fucking crazy.
Yes, he is.
And so good in the best kind of movie villain where it's, I mean, Freddy's fun. Some of those later movies can be fun with the goofing around and the killing. But there's something really fucking awesome. The scene I'm talking about here. He realizes the two are up to something.
Sure.
And Emmett, in an attempt to save Michelle, is like, it was all me.
Yeah.
I, you know, I'm just a little nervous and I was just trying to protect myself and I'm sorry. And it's just a great where he's like, all right, thanks for telling me the truth. Bam! Like, does not waste half a second.
Yeah.
Just immediately. And that whole scene is great. The sound design is amazing in that because he shoots a gun in a small, in a room like this size.
Sure.
Right? It's like an 8 by 10 room.
Yeah.
Airtight room. So that is going to be fucking loud.
Oh.
Your ears are going to be ringing. So now we've got Michelle reacting to this sudden murder. You can't hear anything. And then...
yes. Enough to make you question your television equipment.
Right.
Like,
but, you know, and already he's on her like, it's cool now. We're good. That guy was going to hurt us. Now we're a happy family. Like, I knew it would eventually come to this. So that, even that line is like, he just needed an excuse to get fucking Emmett out of the way.
Yes. Yeah.
In the most brutal way possible, because he has a giant 55-gallon drum of corrosive oil.
Yes. Of acid.
Of acid, yes. Yeah.
So, no, yeah, it's, and it gets really creepy that way. Like, here's the thing. You go through certain aspects of certain times of your life where you just assume that because somebody is older or designated as in charge, that they're suited for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case. I had a fifth grade teacher named Mr. Mantle, Jim Mantle. I hope he's rotting in hell. literally. I hope that fucker is rotting. He would be drunk. He would scream at me with a finger, an eighth of an inch from my nose. He would call up fifth grade. Now, let me repeat that again. Fifth grade girls up to the counter, up to his desk, and rub his hand up and down the back and up the back of their shirt while looking down the front of it. And we all sat there. The boys sat there helpless, knowing that we should help these girls who were like our sisters. And we fucking had to watch it happen.
Yeah.
He eventually was fired. You know, I mean, it took years
yeah.
of everybody knowing this. And but we felt helpless because he was the one in charge. And that's the feeling that you get with this, which is, Emmett is the sweetheart, and Michelle is just trying to find her way. But fucking Howard is crazy, and he's not good. And that shooting of Emmett, and I had seen this movie before, by the way, literally no memory of that whatsoever. And
yeah,
it is
I thought
shocking.
It came later. Like, I thought he like let them dissipate and then she like came back and like couldn't find him. Like, I created this whole scene in my head, but no, it's like literally the opposite. They were wasting no fucking time at all.
And we have to see repeat shots of Emmett's whatever the fuck left over in the vat of acid.
Yep.
So yeah, it's traumatic. When that happens and you feel even more hopeless than ever, but I guess this is where it kind of feels good that she has been on the mission from the beginning. Like, this is a girl that is a woman that is not giving up, has wanted out from the very beginning, trusted her instincts, and now it's just a matter of beating him. Now, I will ask you this question as far as, because we haven't talked too much about technicality in this movie.
Mm.
You mentioned it with the sound design there. When Michelle does, quote unquote, overpower Howard,
yeah.
she kicks that vat of acid over and he looks like he's goddamn making love to it.
Yeah.
When we see him later, you expect a lot gnarlier gore.
Yeah.
You don't really get much, a little bit of rosacea on his neck,
right,
maybe.
Yeah.
But it's not super hardcore.
Cause he's laying in it for a while.
Yes. Like, he's like, yeah, he's like doing. Like,
I mean, you expect he's not getting out of it, and if he does get out of it, you're right. He needs to look way worse.
Yes,
especially in a movie that has, you know, very little. You don't see Emmett when he gets shot.
No,
that is such a cool shot too.
Yeah,
where the camera's kind of moving around, and then he's out of frame as he gets shot.
Yeah.
So yeah, very little blood in this movie.
Very little.
Fucking give it to me right there.
Right.
But it is just a very, you're right.
It's a little bit of redness. Yeah, a little bit of irritation on the, I wore a turtleneck that day. It was hot outside. But yeah, it's just
like
a little.
He answered an iron, like his ears just kind of a little burnt. And yeah. That's about it.
So yeah, I would have liked a little bit more there. But even still, we're still terrified for her because now he's always been crazy.
Yeah.
Now he's just had laid to whatever extent in a vat of acid. So yeah, the stakes are high. The tension is high. By the way, the tension has been high throughout. But let me talk. I don't want to run away from that, the technicality part of it. There is a scene where Michelle is talking to Emmett. Michelle's back is to the wall. Emmett's back is to the wall. And probably the most touching part of the scene, well, there's two touching things. There's a story about Michelle seeing a girl essentially abused by her father, a young girl, and that how much that affected to see this helpless person dragged around by her father. On the opposite side of the wall, we hear Emmett's story about having such a chance to do something at life with a guy that, for all we can tell, probably the best things in the world should have happened to this guy. And yeah, he was on a track to do that, literally, and then didn't follow through with it. But what's neat is I was watching, especially the scenes with Michelle, she's in this sort of like, I don't know where people pick the colors when they half-ass paint a basement, but like half of it's green, half of it's pink. Like there's like the weirdest choices of colors. Like why didn't they finish it either way? Right. But she's against this, that sort of Pepto-Bismol pink in the back. And it feels like a fucking like 90s indie movie.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a model, like a Calvin Klein shot or shoot. And it, so the movie really does have that gritty indiness to it, which is only makes the end worse.
Yeah.
But do you feel that the mood, the atmosphere, the closeness, the tenseness, the tension, the independent sort of feel of what is 90% of the movie, do you feel like that was effective for you?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah.
And that's the fucking shame of the 10 minutes. Yeah, the vibe of this movie
top to bottom is I'm in 100%.
Yeah.
I'm engaged. I'm interested.
Because you can't make one false move in this. When you're doing this kind of movie, you can't do acting.
Right.
I'm doing air quotes right now. Like, you can't really have a false move.
Yeah.
It's got to feel as natural as it possibly could be.
Yeah.
And they do a great job
of that.
There's
a moment just where John Goodman's giving her the liquor that he distills.
Yeah.
And just the way he like looks over his shoulder to offer it to her, I'm like, what a fucking pro actor move to look. And it's something I try and like, it's probably one of the things I'm most conscious about when I do a show or something is trying to do unique movements that look natural, that aren't like, here's where I'm doing this now, you know?
Yeah.
I'm
doing the thing.
Yeah. Just finding odd, because we make odd motions throughout the day and, you know, things as we go through the kitchen, we haven't rehearsed it 50 times. Right.
Right,
so
sure.
It's, you know, you're doing things wrong. So I like doing that. So just like fucking little moments like that. But let me ask you. I mean, we both love John Goodman.
Well, I'm going to run to the bathroom real quick. So I'm going to have you go first because I was literally going to do that. Tell me a little bit about your reaction as an actor, as either just a general viewer or as an actor to seeing John Goodman's work throughout the years.
Yeah, he's a guy, you know, anyone our age knows him as Dan Connor, obviously from the hit show Roseanne, back when it, was not problematic. But no, good show. He was, you know, big fat guy. You're just kind of like, wow, this guy is fun. And then he started breaking into some film and my first kind of, I'm going to sit back. This guy moment was Barton Fink, Coen Brothers movie, my favorite filmmakers, the Coen Brothers. These are probably interlinked because I saw Barton Fink when I was in high school. I was ready for all that fucking movie shit that the Coen Brothers were bringing at the time. So, you know, watching that movie, John Turturro is amazing in it as well. But you have John Goodman in it as this weird villainous kind of guy. He's eerie. He's suspicious. And where I'm just like, this is fucking Dan Connor is the villain in this movie, to where at the end he's just like running down a hallway with a shotgun, like he goes totally nuts. So that was the first time where I was just like, oh, fucking John Good. Like, I went and saw King Ralph. That was fun. It was a good time. But yeah, like seeing his real dramatic stuff. So definitely Barton Fink was the first one. And then, I mean, that's, I would love to go. I really didn't go back and deep dive into his filmography because I would love to see like where I was like, I mean, definitely by The Big Lebowski, I was like, fuck yes, John. That might have been the movie where I'm like, all right, John Goodman is at the top of my list. Like, the guy can do no wrong.
What year was that?
That was 95.
Well, you're about 11 years late there. Because he also made a movie called Goddamn Revenge of the Nerds.
Well, yeah.
And he's so fucking good in that.
Great in that.
He's so good
now
in that.
I got to look up his film.
But it look what happens there, and I'm not taking anything away from what you just said. I had to jump on that because...
I mean, but no one's watching Revenge of the Nerds going, favorite actor.
Right, right. But it absolutely exemplifies what we know John Goodman for, which is he's going to play a role, a comedic role, hilariously.
Yeah.
But he's going to get to that comedy through playing it straight as fuck and serious as fuck. When they're in the locker room in drag and he's like, when your dad looked down on you in your crib, he said, someday my son is going to be a man. Well, look at you now.
You just got your asses whipped by a bunch of goddamn nerds. Yeah, I know the line.
Yes. So here we get this guy acting his fucking balls off in this screwball comedy, but taking that role like ultra fucking seriously. And that's what made it so funny. So that's what John Goodman does. We have this perception of him as some big jolly goofball, but it turns out that the guy is just a fucking killer ass technical actor.
Oh, do you remember what other movie we've covered him in? Same year as Revenge of the Nerds.
What?
Yeah.
What?
He had a very bit part. We were
in a night school.
No, close though. Kind of.
Wasn't he one of the cops?
He is a cop.
And it wasn't Night School?
No, it wasn't Night School.
It was at night. But he's with the... Is it New Year's Evil?
No, it's Chud.
Oh, fuck, Chud. Yes. Chud. God damn. That's a deep dive there. No, but that's what makes John Goodman John Goodman. Like, I'm trying to think of...
Interesting filmography. Because, yeah, it goes Revenge of the Nerds. He's in that, like, David Byrne movie, True Stories. I never saw that. Then he does Raising Arizona. Yeah. Next year is Punchline.
Yeah.
He's so fucking versatile for a fat man. As a fat man.
Yeah.
Maybe that's another reason I've...
6 foot three. See, I mean, for Hollywood, he's 7 feet tall. Big guy. And... In Punchline, which I rewatched, I actually rented it so I could just watch it for 15 minutes today. The scene that I mentioned in the last episode where Sally Field, his wife, for whatever reason, gets a perm. And it's fucking awful.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And their two kids are there and she comes in and she's... Sally Field is great. Like she's, you know, crying and like, I look awful. I look terrible. And she really does. And her two kids are kind of, and John Goodman are like, oh, fuck, like, oh, my God. And she's losing her shit. And he's like, no, he's like, come here, sit down. He's like, let's have a look at this. Let's have a look at this. And he stands up out of his chair and he kind of holds his hand out to almost as if he's like examining like a work of fine art. And he just says, I think it's fantastic. And if you watch that scene, what's so beautiful about it is that he's not just faking it. He's not just looking at her hair. He holds his hand out and then he has this shift. And in that shift, it goes from being this really bad hair to seeing the woman that he loves with their two children on the side of her. And then he says, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's
fucking gorgeous. It is beautiful. And he is such a gifted guy. Then, of course, I had to watch that scene where Tom Hanks just loses his shit on stage. Have you ever seen that movie before?
I have, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's Tom Hanks is a little overwrought in it. I mean, it's affecting, but he plays like a stand-up comedian that is just kind of getting in his own way and like afraid of success. So every time there's somebody there to make him in the audience, he fucks up
He does the crowd work that just fucking bombs
and he talks about like his dad wanted him to be in med school, and then he was in med school and a girl like flicked an eye from like a frog that they were dissecting on his neck, and he just starts crying, like tears are just flooding, like he couldn't. Yeah, it's really fucking Punchline is a
good,
powerful fucking movie.
It is a good movie.
And so here's the thing about John Goodman. His dad died when he was 2 years old, and his brother went away to school. Eventually his brother came back and you know, there was a little bit of a father figure there, but really his father figures growing up were, he was really heavily into the Boy Scouts. So as Boy Scout leaders or theater directors, he did play football and he did really well in football, but he injured his knee. So that's when he switched to drama. I swear to God, I've seen that for about 15 actors before. Right. Burt Reynolds, like, I mean, they all do it. They're all like these athletes and then they switch to drama.
Yeah.
But he was made fun of because of his weight. He was bullied. He was picked on. He didn't have a dad. And here's the thing, people. Like, you look at John Goodman, you're like, man, what a force. Like, what? Like, he's giant in size. He's giant in power. He's giant in talent. But never forget for a second, I'm going to say this without choking up. Sometimes the people that we see as good actors are good actors. They're so good at fitting into the mold of the other people that they play because they don't fit at all in into their own. And so I'm sorry. That's really, I don't mean to be pretentious, but I'm just saying this is a classic example of a guy that looks so fucking powerful, but obviously has a lot of pain, and he uses that and it translates into like some of the best performances I've ever seen.
Yeah. And it's also a bummer as a fat guy, because you're like, I was always using how fat I am as an excuse as to why I didn't make it.
Right.
You see like John Goodman and like Paul Walter Hauser, and you're like, oh, fuck you, fatties, bastards.
But you know, that's what's crazy about Goodman, though, is that you see him go through those ups and downs. We're like, where are we at with John Goodman right now? Is it thin Goodman? And is it like turkey gobble Goodman? Or is it like, you know, that's
turkey gobble Goodman?
Yes.
He did have a neck for a while there.
I did have something written down here, and I decided not to say. We were even talking recently about an accent, you know, not being appropriate anymore, but I did have a note somewhere that was like good men good at playing bad men. But anyhow, it is true.
I will also point out real quick, this is also our third John Goodman movie.
You're kidding.
There's a reason you don't remember the third one. You did not like it. It is one of our least popular episodes.
No shit. Wait.
Yeah, there's the clue.
Oh, that's it was one that you wouldn't think would be unpopular.
I was surprised it's unpopular.
That's right. Yeah. Which
it's
one
a movie I liked that you would think I wouldn't like.
Fuck.
Arachnophobia.
Yes. God damn it. Yes.
Oh, and for anyone who also listened last week, where as we were recording, a spider descended from the ceiling and I trapped it under a can. I will let you know, I did release the spider at the end of the
episode.
Good
for you.
I did. I let
personal
it go.
Personal growth.
Yeah. So it is waiting to attack, I'm sure, somewhere in
there. No, that's great. But no, he's
arachnophobia is before King Ralph. Like, now looking at his filmography, it's like, what did send him over? Because he got The Babe. It's like, I guess The Babe. Like, John Goodman's a guy who was like, I guess he did some good leads. He's not the best lead guy. I'm going to say that.
So in watching the interviews that I watched with him in preparation for this, you make an excellent point, because several of those interviews feel like it's an interview about the thing that is breaking him.
Yeah.
Like that's making him. A lot of it was Babe stuff.
Yeah.
That was a big portion of it.
Because that felt like, can John Goodman carry this movie about this important guy? And the consensus was, Yeah.
Yeah. But
no one was like the babe didn't garner any kind of.
Right. But we're probably overlooking the obvious, though.
What?
It's Roseanne. I mean, Roseanne really brought him to everyone. Oh, his
part on sure, yeah.
I mean, we were aware of him before that, but as far as like America or the world as a whole, they got to know John Goodman through Roseanne.
Well, when was Roseanne? That was the 80s, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean,
that's kind of at the same time. Because, yeah, King Ralph. God, I could have swore it was much earlier than 91. That's the same year as Barton Fink. So he has to be done with Roseanne by then, right? Because he didn't do the last season or two seasons of the first show.
Maybe.
I don't remember. This is just movies, so I don't know.
So, yeah, I think movie people were well aware of him prior to that.
And then Flintstones in 94. I'm sure that helps. Yeah.
Sure.
And then, Big God, he had a 98. That Fallen and Big Lebowski were 98.
So when I can tell you this much.
And Blues Brothers 2000.
I can tell you this much.
Do not watch Blues Brothers 2000.
I don't plan to. It took me this long to watch the first one. I won't get around to it. So I can tell you this from watching the interviews with him. The two movies that he references the most himself personally are Lebowski and Barton Fink.
Okay.
Like those are the two that I think to him anyhow feel like the breaks.
Yeah.
You know, the big stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
In fact, he even said that he would love to have Walter down in the bunker with Howard. And he's like, Walter would make short work of Howard, real quick. But which is pretty awesome. But a wounded, sensitive dude, but that he brings it in his roles and it's fantastic. Tough to say. He's so good with comedy and he's so good with drama. It's tough to say which one is his better suit. God, I don't know. Although I don't know.
I love his comedy. Because he plays it so straight. Like, maybe him in Raising Arizona is so good, but he's so, him and Forsythe, right? Is that the other guy? Yeah. What's his full name? Something Forsythe.
William Forsythe. William Forsythe. Yeah.
Yeah. They're the two guys who escaped prison in Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
Very menacing in that, too. I mean, he knows.
Maybe that's his shtick, is that it's all drama, whether it's comedy or drama.
Good point. All right.
I mean, he's hitting the beats, but
he plays Walter pretty seriously. Like,
abso-fucking-lutely. And that's what makes Walter for fuck's sake. Walter is overly serious. That's the whole character. And he's kind of perfect that way.
Yeah.
And I know that this role was, I want to say written for him, rewritten in the third or fourth incarnation for John Goodman.
Okay.
Not because of a movie that he was in, but because of an interview that he was in where he was losing his temper.
Oh.
And it was that interview that they were like, no, he's the guy. Him getting frustrated and pissed off.
In the interview?
Yes, exactly. So let's talk for a second about the shittiest part about this movie.
Okay. The last 10 minutes. Okay,
right. So this is right. So this is important because we have to be clinical about this.
Yeah.
I know that it's easy.
Before we do that, anything you want to say about Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
Oh, I thought she was fantastic. And I'm glad that you brought that up. She's excellent. It's a physical role. This is going to sound like so dismissive. She looks like a designer. She looked like clothing designers have a specific look where it's kind of like, I don't really care about how I look, but it still looks kind of artsy and cool.
Yeah.
She nails the look. I feel that she is truly competent in the things that she's trying. She certainly doesn't overdo it. This would be a really easy role to be like a lot of like, I'm mad, so I'm going to huff, you know, like it'd be really easy to overdo it visually. But she's focused. She's focused on getting out. She kind of maintains her shit. She never really loses it.
No.
And I think she does a really good job of convincing us that she's a person that can do that. And I really love what you said earlier about her character already being on a path of making a life change, a difficult life change.
Yeah.
I think that's really insightful. And I think that it's really important. They had a whole other beginning to this where she was going to be like arguing with her boyfriend and that scene was going to play out. And they're like, we don't need that.
Yeah.
Especially since we get a really cool cut in of the titles with her accident. Like as her accident is happening, we get a really nice title section there, which is really cool. I thought she was absolutely fantastic. She's got the right look. She's got the right chops. She's got the right physicality. She's selling every bit of it. I like that she is never a damsel in distress. I think that that's really important.
Right.
She's never helpless. And she's never overwrought. She's just in survival mode.
Yeah.
I think she's great.
Yeah.
And the guy, and God forgive me, is a junior that plays
John
Emmett.
Gallagher.
Yeah.
Junior. The second film we've covered, we did the Belko experiment.
Yes.
Experiment.
Yes. And apparently we're not going to do Hush because you can't stand it. But
it's not good.
He's just a really likable dude.
Yeah.
And he's just dead perfect for the role.
Yeah.
I mean, he's exactly that fucking guy. So I think he's excellent. We could go on and on about John Goodman, but great performances throughout. So we get to this last 10 minutes.
All right.
What's crucial is this. You say that you don't like it. I understand that. But we have to be concise about saying what exactly is it about the execution of that 10 minutes? Is it the concept itself, or is it the execution, or is it both?
It's like everything. It's so unnecessary. It feels so tacked on. I did say it earlier, like it does. It feels like going through a list of like, all right, what are some things that can happen to her now? Because, yes, if you don't know, the end of this movie. So throughout the movie, right, John Goodman is, he doesn't know what's going on. So he's like, I don't know. Could be Russians, could be aliens. Don't know. We do know, we did not bring up, there is a woman who shows up. So to kind of solidify for us, the audience, something is going on. Like this woman, her face looks half baked.
Yeah.
And she's trying to get into the bunker. Yeah. This happens at the same time that Michelle is trying to escape. And this is when she's like, okay, I'll stay. And we get montage.
Mm-hmm.
So we know something's going on. Again. So, like, the thing with her face, I don't know how it relates to the end of the movie even. Because, so the reveal is, she climbs out of the room that she was in earlier. Good setup there with John Goodman talking about, because when they're drinking, he uses compressed air to cool her metal cup. And he's like, yeah, we used to use this to, like, break the locks at school or whatever it was. You get them cold and then they're brittle. Yeah, in the Navy. Thank you.
Yeah.
They're cold and they get brittle and then you can break them. So that's how she gets out of the padlocked window that she finds earlier in the movie. So she gets out and now we have a 10-minute sequence of her. She gets out. She's like, oh, I'm safe. Then she hears like a weird noise. So she gets up on the truck and off in the distance, we see a spaceship. I mean, I'm going to say this right now. She could get up on all of this is fine. She can get up on the space. And this happens in the movie, not this quickly. Because they have to waste fucking time. So there's some other shit in between this. But because the ship eventually turns toward her because the bunker blows up because it's been on fire and it's just a pressurized room. Well, not pressurized, but small room. It's going to explode. So all the hatches and shit blow. That's what brings the ship back over to her area. And she goes, oh, come on. Okay. This movie easily can end. She gets out, climbs up on a truck just to get her bearings. And it doesn't have to be one spaceship. It could be anything. It could be she can see a city in the distance. She can see a few ships. She can see one ship. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Just something for us to go, ah, there was something going on. And her to go, oh, come on. Blackout. End a movie. That's all you need. That's fine. The whole movie is about her trying to escape a situation that she's trapped in, right? Now she's not trapped. She's outside. So all that shit's gone. So now it's just this, you know, there's one part she kind of rips her suit. So she's got to frantically tape her suit back up. Now, like, even the spaceship that starts coming toward her, like, turns around. So in this 10 minutes, all the things that happen to her logically don't even make sense in of themselves what's going on.
Yeah.
So you got the ship coming that's... I'm like, oh, it's coming to investigate this explosion. Then it turns around. You're like, why the fuck did it turn around? We have a part where there is a lone alien loose that's like chasing her around, but she's always faster than it. You know, we've got now like, here's our Jurassic Park scene where she's in the barn. And I'm going to tell you, I've kind of checked out during this, so I might be getting what's going on in this part wrong. You know, now we've got, she's trying to run up to the house, a giant ship that came out of nowhere. Why is this giant ship here? No one knows. It comes. She immediately knows for some reason, get the hood on because it's going to start spraying shit that I don't want to breathe, which it does do. So she survives that. Then is there a giant alien in that ship? I don't remember.
Tough to say.
Doesn't matter. It's all a waste of time and useless. So that then we can have a scene where she is now in the truck. A gargantuan alien has picked up the truck and is going to eat her. And she has this bottle of Glenfarclan, which is not a real scotch. It's a mix of Lavagulin and probably Glenfiddich or whatever Glen. Which I went back and watched the beginning of this just so because I'm like, did it really say that on the bottle? And yes, it does. Glenfarclan. And but that scene in itself is, you can, like, knowing it from the end feels completely spliced in. Like, there is no continuation shot of her because it's just, we see the bottle, she walks by and grabs it on her way out of the house. But there's no continuation shot, right, of us seeing her then leaving. It's just like its own shot. Here is a person. You can't even see it's her. Like, it's a close-up on the bottle and a body walks by. So that part obviously added in at the beginning because they're like, we got to have an explosion. We're going to explode an alien in this movie.
All right.
Because she somehow knows, oh, if I make a Molotov cocktail out of this random scotch I grabbed, it will blow up this alien. Like, and it works. Like, everything fucking works that she tries. And then at the end, it's her driving away, and there's shit on the radio, like, the most basic, like, dumb movie, like, there are survivors. We're fighting back on the South Coast. Come to Houston. Houston needs heroes. So she fucking literally pulls up to a goddamn... The radio is like, go to Baton Rouge or Houston. And then she thankfully pulls up next to a fucking street sign that has the direction for Baton Rouge and has the direction for Houston. She turns down Houston and it's a long stretch. And then we see a giant city that looks devastated at the end. I'm like, is that Houston? Like, Houston's not in the middle of a field.
No.
Like, Houston is the size of Connecticut.
Right.
Like, it's enormous. Like, what the fuck am I even looking at? Why is that in the movie at all? How does any of that pertain other than we got to tag this fucking Cloverfield name on here some way and just have... Even if that is the dumb thing they're doing, I'm still on board. If they just show one ship, I go, there's aliens, and it's over. I don't need to see her fighting the alien. It does, there's nothing been in it. Even like having the bottle of whiskey or whatever, or scotch, like that, she never talks about drinking. Even when she's offered the drink, she's not like, oh, thank God, I love drinking. Like, when I leave my boyfriend, I make sure I leave my ring and bring the scotch.
Yes.
Like, you know, so it's just this added crap to tie in an IP that's unnecessary. And you ruin, they don't ruin the movie. I mean, that is a testament to the movie where I'm like, still loved the movie. 9 out of 10. Would have been a 10 out of 10
sure.
If not for this shit at the end that no one wanted, no one needed. No one, ask anyone. Ask anyone if they've seen this movie, they'll be like, oh, yeah, awesome. But no one goes, that ending, though. Wow. Blew me away.
Well, it's perfectly articulated.
I'm not passionate about it, though. It's the good thing.
The biggest sin of it is not even that you tacked it. Yeah. The biggest sin.
Looking at the audio waves on a recording, and I may have peaked the system.
The biggest sin about it is not even that it's tacked on. It's that you didn't trust your movie well enough to let it be what it already was. That's the shame of it. Like, it's like you see all these promposals and all this stuff, and it's like you're going to go to some huge effort to have, like, everybody at the basketball game be involved, and you could just go up to the girl, like, in a passing period and say, like, I was sitting in class, and I was thinking about your shoulder. I was thinking about the shoes that you wore the first time that we went out, and I can't stop thinking about you, and you make me feel like I'm vibrating on the inside, and I would love to go to prom with you. Those little details are probably going to resonate with her a lot more than a bunch of people doing the fucking wave at the basketball game on, right, on whatever night they play basketball in high school. I never went to a game. But anyway, what I'm saying is you didn't trust your movie enough to let it be the beautiful, small, compact thing that it was. And don't even try to fucking tell me that you didn't know that that's what it was, because it's in a fucking bunker.
Yeah.
Like, you know what this movie is. Listen,
we watched the trailer last week, or it's been a few days now, yeah, when we finished the last episode and picked this movie. We went out and watched the trailer. Phenomenal trailer, I'm going to say.
Yes.
Does a thing that movies do now where we were both kind of like, but it gets passed because it does the slowed down song, but it's not like a remake. Like, it's not a shitty remake of a song, right? So it is the, like, children behave. And we're just seeing that. We're seeing just people live down in a bunker. And then through the second chorus of that song, it starts slowing down. The movie starts showing us weirder intent. You know, John Goodman doing the hand clench. So, and the slowing of that song, and you're just like, oh, God, what is happening? No aliens in that trailer.
Yes.
I'm not going to see aliens, all right? I know there is a girl. I don't even care about that other guy. I'm just like, there is a girl trapped in a bunker with a creepy guy, and that movie's probably intense.
I don't give a shit who he is. I would march right up to J.J. Abrams and be like, you know you fucked that up. And I would look him dead in the eye, and there's no fucking way that he could absolutely try to excuse what he did. He would have to know that he just Hollywooded that gorgeous little movie that they had made.
Yeah.
And here's the biggest thing. Now, I haven't seen the third film. I've heard it's garbage. But I'll tell you what right now.
Go ahead.
If that third movie doesn't pick up fucking immediately from where that one does,
Tim,
then there's
In space.
Okay, well, then there's no excuse. No. Then there's no excuse. Even if you wanted to put...
Go ahead.
If you wanted to put in your Houston stuff, she could have been hearing that on the... Even if we had to shoehorn that in to your ending, where she gets up on the truck and she sees that shit's fucked up, maybe she could have flipped on the radio, and maybe the radio is saying, like, go to Houston, and then maybe we have her, like, look down in doubt and then look up with like a look of like Che Guevara, like intensity, like I'm going to go to Houston.
Yeah.
That's all you would have needed. You wouldn't have needed to throw a Molotov cocktail into an alien vagina.
Right.
You wouldn't have needed to do that. And the fact that they did it is just absolute cowardice.
Yeah.
It's cowardice on the part of Hollywood to say that you didn't trust in something that, by the way, was 100% better than what you threw together in the last 10 minutes. And you're cowards for not standing by the movie that you were willing to ride the quality of to get your movie shoehorned into it. And then you hitched a ride on this great script, but we're too much of a pussy to fucking let that script be what it is.
Yep.
And I don't know. I mean, well,
just be like, I don't have a sequel. I don't have a sequel to Cloverfield. I don't. Let's end it there. not let's find something to be the sequel to Cloverfield.
How about you take that fucking money that you made from that first movie that did well and actually developed a new original script?
Right.
What's the problem there? It's not a franchise, but it's another movie. So what's the fucking difference?
Even in this movie, if you're going to show me a city, show me a giant monster in it. Okay. Now this is now I understand the bigger world where not just New York of Cloverfield is being attacked by a monster, but they're in other major cities. I'm still okay with that. And again, you don't need the whole 10-minute segment.
No.
You can do it, like you said. Even if she just gets out, says, oh, come on, leaves, and hears on the radio, and she's like, I'm going to Houston. That's fine. Dude, you want to hear something even worse. The release of the third movie is the most egregious shit of all. And it's kind of, I'm going to say it, it was kind of the start of the end for Netflix. It's the one where everyone went, oh, there are some cracks in this.
Oh.
Because it was a movie that was literally like announced the day before it was released. No one knew it existed. And then all of a sudden they were like, and I think it was an ad during the Super Bowl. It was.
Oh, that's right.
And it's like, tomorrow, the fucking Cloverfield Paradox debuting on Netflix. And every nerd went, fuck yes, thank God, because this is still a franchise they want something from. They've enjoyed these two movies, even though they are poorly related to each other. There is still, like, maybe you're like, okay, maybe there's something there. Even if you want to make it some sort of anthology series, there was enough in that second movie where I'm excited now.
Sure.
And this piece of, talk about a movie where they were just like, I don't know, do we make this a Cloverfield movie? Like, it's just set in space, and it's about, like, a warp drive, and then there are, like, other ships that warp it. I don't even want to try to explain
that
it.
That makes me wonder if...
And then they shoehorn a giant, like, they open a dimensional portal, and they shoehorn the giant monster from the first Cloverfield into the very end of that movie.
I did hear that, what's his name, Irish is all get out.
Yeah, he's on the IT
Donald.
Crowd. Yeah.
I hear that he's supposed to be a possible relative to Howard in the movie.
Oh, fuck that.
That they
Whatever.
Imply that.
Whatever.
But here's the thing. The fact that we've seen through that now. When it goes straight to Netflix, we know, like, you fucked up. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying all Netflix.
Those were still the days where you're like excited for some Netflix movies.
Well, still,
we're in Bird Box territory.
But maybe they knew that they had an absolute shitbird on their hands, and they were like, oh, we're not going to press this for a long period of time because that's just going to build up the wave. We're just going to make it like, bam, here you go, guys.
Yep,
and forget about that shit because it kind of sucks.
Yeah, it was. Here's the name Cloverfield. Everyone freaked out for 48 hours. Everyone watched, and anyone who wanted to watch that watched it in that 48 hours. They got their streaming numbers, and everyone went, oh, you fucking assholes.
Like, and that was the end of it.
Fool anybody.
That was the end of it then.
That was the end of it, yeah.
Well, serves them right.
Yeah. So now, they can't, it's a fool me once, fool me twice kind of thing.
Right.
They cannot release another Cloverfield movie unless it's just like, this is a direct sequel to the first one. No one's going to fucking buy it.
Real quick before we get to the end here, I have to go to the bathroom one more time.
Oh my God.
But let me just ask you this, though. You've seen the first one.
Yeah.
Is that a good movie?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It's one of those, it's all like handheld. It's like a found footage movie.
Okay.
So another one where it's like, put the fucking camera down,
dude. Does
it
use that like sound?
Sure. Yeah. But that was like one of the first ones.
Yeah.
That's where it came from.
That's fair.
That's the one where it's like the party, like the trailer is like a party in an apartment, just like friends, like having dinner or whatnot. And it's like someone's graduation or something. And then they hear something outside and they go out to the balcony and you see like an explosion in the background. And then like the head of the Statue of Liberty comes crashing into the road in front of their building. It's pretty badass.
That's kind of awesome.
It's pretty badass.
Let me ask you this real quick, because what's kind of fun is that when you're, streaming these movies and whatnot, it'll show you like similar movies at the bottom.
Yeah.
Did you ever see Tom Cruise's War of the Worlds?
Yeah.
Did you like that?
Yeah.
Talk to about that movie for 1 second while I piss before we wrap this up. Because I actually kind of fucking love that movie.
Well, it's a Steven Spielberg movie, so he knew what he was doing. Yeah, he directed that. I know. It doesn't feel like a Steven Spielberg movie. That is kind of what's weird about it. It's like, why did you want to do this? But he's been making monster hits for 30 years, so he can do whatever the fuck he wants. Yeah, a movie that is kind of weird. War of the Worlds is really cool for like the first half. I feel like it kind of drops off in the second half. But yeah, Tom Cruise is great in that. Dakota Fanning, I believe, is in that. She's good. The son was on that show Shameless. I remember that. He was not great. But yeah, a good movie, worth a watch, I guess. But I mean, as far as Spielberg movies go, probably wouldn't even be in my top 15. Go see Minority Report if you're going to watch any Steven Spielberg movie you probably missed. Minority Report is really good. Don't see The Terminal. That's not very good. Charlie Wilson's War. I don't even know if that was Spielberg.
Oh, we're just rambling off Spielberg
just
movies?
Just Spielberg movies now, yeah.
What is the most...
There's not much to say about War of the Worlds. Well, no, it's like one of the most talked about productions of all time.
It was like, it was the one movie that... It's funny how like sometimes a movie just needs one hook, one line to be like, ooh, that's so badass.
Yeah.
And it's literally in the very beginning when the shit is kind of hitting the fan and... I can't remember if it's that the wind is blowing toward the storm or away from the storm.
Uh-huh.
But Tom Cruise makes the point of like that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, why is the wind blowing?
Oh, yeah. Toward... But the clouds are moving one way, but the wind's blowing a different way. Yeah.
But I actually really like that movie. Someday we'll do a horror movie. Well, this is a great question, actually. A Tom Cruise horror movie.
The Mummy? Terrible movie.
The Mummy.
Yeah. Oh, Tim, you don't know about Universal's Dark Universe?
Well, I know that they were trying for a second there.
Yeah.
Wait, he did a mummy movie?
Yeah. But here's the thing, how they fucked it up. Because they were like, okay. Because they even did like a Vanity Fair shoot. I'm pretty sure it was all a composite photo. Like, no one was there at the same time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like, ooh, we've got so-and-so for the Wolfman, and so-and-so is playing Frankenstein. And then we've got Tom Cruise kicking it off as Dr. Barry Gordon. And you're like, who?
Yikes.
But it's because he, like, defeats the mummy, but then gains mummy powers by the end of it. But, of course, you don't want to be like, Tom Cruise is the mummy.
Dude, we could almost, and only because what I'm about to say is half-ass true, and also because I've always wanted to see this movie again, and also because I think it's a good movie, and also because it has an actor that we love in it. You could maybe make a case for Vanilla Sky being a horror movie.
Yeah.
Plus, it has a rare, pure dramatic role by Kurt Russell.
Oh, is he in that?
He plays a psychiatrist. Oh, that is,
I barely remember that movie.
You have, Carmen Diaz, Cameron Diaz?
Cameron Diaz, yeah.
Saying the thing like you came in my mouth, like that is a commitment, and I'm like, oh fuck, bitches be cray. But no, like it's a great movie though, like, and it is sort of horrific.
Yeah.
But yeah, has Tom Cruise ever done a straight up, other than The Mummy,
right?
Has he ever done a straight up horror movie?
Horror movie. Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. But either way, let's just at least say this, that we loved this movie, and we are not going to let the last 10 minutes take away from this in a similar way that we aren't going to let a string of garbage sequels take away from an original. It feels like a shortened version of that.
This is of the movies that Hollywood has like bastardized in a way. This is the best one and the easiest one to separate from the shit.
Yeah.
Because it is its own compartmentalized thing at the very end.
Right.
It's not really sprinkled through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's silly. I mean, you, I think felt a little bit stronger about it than I did.
Yeah.
I feel that way now, but you're right. Going back and looking at it, it's fucking goofy.
Watch it again, because that's what I was like. I remember not liking the end of this movie, and then watching it again, I'm like, what? Oh, fuck, man.
Okay.
None of this is important.
Well, speaking of the end of things.
Oh.
You want to roll?
Is it time to roll?
I think it's rolling.
It's time to roll. We are
Oh, are we using the fancy?
Yeah, we've got the four-sided die. We have four movies left on the list. One of these will be killed and buried forever. Let's see. What do we got? Oh, roll it, baby. God, yeah, we've all got the one we want.
I'm like terrified.
Okay, here we go. And it's the at the top. Oh, you're going to be very happy.
Oh, is it?
Guys, I don't know if I'm going to be happy. Tim's happy.
Oh, no.
Everyone, please join us next week as Evil Dice Tonight inches ever closer to its horrifying finale as we cover from 1988. Oh, take no. your pick. It's either Cheerleader Camp or Bloody Pom Poms.
Oh, I'm sorry, everybody. I am so sorry.
I'm excited
I've
about
never
that.
Seen it.
No, me, I've never heard of it.
What was the
I
year?
Don't even, they don't know what to call it.
What's the year again?
1988. So
same
I'm
year
really
as Cutting Class.
I'm really afraid we're in a Cutting Class territory where it's like we've missed the boat on being fun, cheesy, and are just cash grabbing shit balls.
We might have to watch this one together. Just to save this podcast. But it's the last. Well, no, we're not going to say what's on the list.
No,
we're just saying that it is what it is.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, either Bloody Pom Poms.
I'll say this. It's the last of this type that's on the list.
Yes,
for sure.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And it's been a little while. I mean, I know we did Cutting Class, but
that doesn't count.
It's been a little while since we've done what was kind of the first wave of this podcast.
Yeah.
Was a lot of that schlocky stuff. So it's a little bit of what our...
Have we made sure we can watch this movie?
Well, that's a very good question.
Let's... what did you think of... I'm trying to think of a question.
Yeah, it is...
I bet you could get a Cheerleader
streaming
Camp,
on microfiche.
Cheerleader Camp, full movie. Boom, look at that. It's on YouTube.
Yeah, high definition.
Oh, you know it's probably the best quality. Actually, it doesn't look too bad.
Yeah.
All right.
It you know what? I mean, look, everybody can die. Everybody can be in a tough situation, and there's no shitty-ass aliens in it, so...
No. Yeah, I doubt I'm going to be like you mad there at no... the interference in the last 10 minutes of this movie.
Yes, absolutely. It'll just be the other 80. Yeah. But no.
Well, I mean, also, fucking 10 Cloverfield Lane, you take out that 10 minutes, it's still an hour 35 minutes. That's fine.
Right.
It's not like they were at an hour 20 and we're like, we got to pad this.
Right.
Anyway, all right.
Yes. So, yeah, and they cut out Goodman's fucking monologue. He cut out what could have been his, like, USS Indianapolis monologue.
Yeah.
For what? The Molotov into the vagina?
Is he getting an award? Academy Award.
Oh, shit.
He should.
Yeah. I think he seems like a Golden Globe-y type guy.
Oh, I'm sure he's won some Golden Globes.
Yeah.
I just remember he was on Saturday Night Live once as Linda Tripp and made a joke about how he thought John Goodman should have been nominated for The Big Lebowski. And I was like,
yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He knows. He knows.
He's not in Bloody Pom Poms.
No.
But somebody is, and I can't wait to figure out who, and I don't imagine that they'll have much in the way of Wikipedia pages, but
no,
we'll do some
interesting cover.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exciting.
That's
Come
exciting.
On.
All right. I'm excited.
It's
I'm
fun.
Excited.
It's fun.
All right. So join us next week for Cheerleader Camp from 1988. You can find it on YouTube. Under Cheerleader Camp, I have not searched Bloody Pom Poms, but I think that's what the trailer is under. Anyway.
Not searched it for that reason anyhow. Go ahead.
check out our website, slumberpodcastmassacre.com. Shoot us an email, slumberpodcast@gmail.com. Check out our fabulous and active social media pages. Huge thanks to our patrons. You help make this show possible. I mean, I never did it. I don't want to invade anyone's privacy, but a small congratulations to one of our patrons who's a daddy now. I haven't really mentioned it on the show, but I'm going to do it
yes.
now. I'm going to do it now. He's a fucking daddy.
Yeah.
I've
kissed him.
You have?
I have. Yeah. On the lips.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Yeah. I haven't. I've hugged him.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you get there someday. Yeah.
Just up that contribution a little bit and get the good stuff.
All right, join us next week for Cheerleader Camp. Tim, do you got anything else to say about 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Other than just like when I was looking at the food that John Goodman was making, and he admits that he's not a great cook, but I thought it all looked pretty good.
I would be very happy with
it. I'm not making fun of anybody here, but I'd look at John Goodman and say that, yes, I would eat what he would cook, because I would imagine it's probably pretty good.
He knows his food.
Yes, he does.
All right.
Bye.